A Your Vote 2016 discussion with 1st District Congressional candidate Mark Holbrook. Mark Holbrook won the Republican primary in Maine's 1st Congressional District by 57 votes and now faces incumbent Shelley Pingree in the general election. There is a clear choice in this race. Holbrook's stance on just about every major issue is different than Pingree's. He opposes the Affordable Care Act, believes in closing the borders to refugees and deporting immigrants who are here illegally, supports the Keystone Pipeline, and wants the U.S. to take a more assertive role in many international conflicts. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We have extended an invitation to every congressional candidate on the ballot in the 1st and 2nd District. Today, it's your chance to question Mark Holbrook about the issues that matter the most to you. A special Your Vote 2016 Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling with a Your Vote 2016 election special. Today, the Republican candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District seat is with me. Now, a licensed counselor, Mark Holbrook earned a PhD in clinical psychology. He's been a policeman, a teacher, a lobsterman, a volunteer firefighter, and a commercial diver. He also holds a U.S. Coast Guard 100-ton master's license. I wonder how many other candidates in America right now can make that claim. Today, he joins me to make his case to replace incumbent Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, who is running for a 5th term. Mark, we had you here in the spring. Welcome back to Maine Calling.
Good afternoon, Jennifer. It's great to be here. Very excited about this.
As always, we'd like you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. All of these Your Vote 2016 programs are a chance for you to ask the candidates directly questions about issues that are important to you. Mark Holbrook, what do you believe is the most important issue facing the U.S. today? What has compelled you to run for office?
Well, I think you can count me among the 73% of Americans who think the country's heading in the wrong direction. 20 months ago when I started this job interview, it was because my wife and I believed that we were going to be leaving our daughter a country that was a lot less than what we had started with. And that really bothered us to think of what kind of a world our child and other people's children would be taken over. When the people ask me which issue is most important to you, I keep saying it's like taking a box of Whitman samplers and taking the lid off and looking at it and say, which one of those delicious things do you grab first? But probably the Veterans Administration disturbs me maybe the most, because a lot of my patients are active duty military or veterans, and I hear firsthand the horror stories that they go through. The national debt is a big one. Illegal immigration is another one. Specifically in southern Maine, the opioid crisis that we have that is apparently epidemic proportions. Pick one of those, but they all need to be addressed.
If you win, you'll be a very junior representative in Congress. Where would you hope to carve out your niche? What committees would you like to serve on? Where do you think you can make your mark despite being brand new?
I'll make my mark just by being there. I mean, I know that there'll be people there that's going to say, oh, good heavens, Holbrook's here, because no one expects me to be there. There's that. And the idea that I could select the committee that I would be appointed to is just foolish. You're right. The junior congressman from Maine is going to get the scraps, and I'll take whatever they give me, and I'll make my mark wherever I go.
But where would you hope to be? What would you like to serve on?
Probably not. It's difficult for me to say in terms of which one I want to work on, because I want to work where I'm going to be the most effective. And there are so many variables that play into that, like who has the leadership role of the committee, who else on the committee has a lot of seniority. There are just so many other variables, and I really don't care. My position is I want to go down and do what's best for the United States citizen. I want to do what's best for the Maine people. not what's in my personal best interest or some sort of special interest best interest. And I can be effective wherever I go. And it really doesn't matter.
You mentioned that an issue that's very important to you is the national debt. How would you reduce the national debt?
I think we start by making sure we have a balanced budget. I mean, that's fundamental to every person in the state of Maine. You know, Mainers understand that you can't live beyond your means. And, you know, that's where we start with that. The other thing is we got to get the economy running. You know, it's all about jobs, 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 jobs. You know, if the economy is humming along and people are employed and they're actively engaged in the whole process, we're going to generate more revenue. And, you know, my opponent would very much like to think that she can tax our way out of it, but we can't do that.
Another big issue for you, you said, is immigration. There have been calls and probably will be calls in the next Congress for immigration reform. Where do you stand on that?
Well, the first thing is we have to secure our borders. We have to know who's coming into this country. That in itself will also help the other issue that I mentioned, which was the drug epidemic problem. You know, these drugs aren't coming from New Hampshire or Massachusetts. They're coming from outside the country. And the reason they're getting in here is because our borders are so porous. So we have to make sure that we secure our borders so that we have a sovereign nation and that we know who's coming in and what they're bringing with them. The legal immigration side of things has to be readdressed. It started out that we were allowing, like the H-1B visa program, allowing 15,000 people into this country, and now we're up over 250,000. That has grown exponentially because of special interest groups, and we've got to stop that. We've got to reel that back in and look at this whole thing and see what's in the best interest of the American citizen.
Do you advocate taking a pause on all immigration, on certain kinds of immigration? What exactly?
Yeah, absolutely pause it. We have to know who's here. And I am dead set against bringing in unvetted refugees, dead set against that. I think that all we're doing is bringing in potential problems for the country. It's costing us a lot of money. You talk about the national debt. If we have 11, you know, the commonly accepted figures that we have 11 million illegal aliens in this country. If that's the commonly accepted number, I'm cynical enough to think we're probably approaching 20 million people. That costs us money. And we can't continue down this road of globalization, of that is, we are going to be the home for anyone who wants to come here from around the world. We just can't do that. 1924, a Democrat president put a pause on all immigration, saying that we had had three waves of immigrants come into this country, and they needed to assimilate into the United States, into the American culture. They put a pause on it for 50 years. That was a good idea, and it was a good plan, and it came forth from a Democrat president who recognized that we were on the verge of possibly losing our country. Governor Jindal, the former governor from Louisiana, I think said it best: immigration without assimilation is an invasion.
Your foreign policy stance is quite different than the other candidate in this race, Shelley Pingree's. You believe America needs to take a more active role in world affairs. For those who aren't following your campaign, explain to us, how assertive would you like to see our nation being and our nation's military being used?
How assertive? I don't know how to put a metric to it, but what I'll say is that we have a moral obligation because of who we are, because the United States is essentially the last of the superpowers on the planet. We have a moral obligation to protect people who can't protect themselves. Now, that doesn't mean we become the world's police officer, but if we have a dictator somewhere that is in essence committing genocide against their own civilians, we have a moral obligation to send in diplomats and say, we don't like this and we want you to stop. And if they don't, we take action. We have to do that. I think that that's the only morally acceptable thing for us to do.
Would you argue for expanding our military to be able to do that?
Well, I don't know that we have to expand it, but the current administration has allowed our military to deteriorate so much. We have to build it back up to a solid standard so that we have a degree of readiness where we can protect ourselves. When you have Marine Corps pilots that are cannibalizing aircrafts in their squadrons so that they can keep their planes flying, and the pilots are doing the work because they don't have enough mechanics, that's a big problem. And that should not be going on. I mean, Donald Trump has said he wants to build the Navy up, I think, to a fleet of 350 ships. We're down now to a low that's below World War II levels, all the while China's building their fleet, as is the Soviet Union or Russia.
How do we do that while maintaining a balanced budget or while creating a balanced budget?
Yeah, if I had all of the facts and figures in front of me, I'd say this is how we do it. That is what we have to do. I don't have the details on how to do that, Jennifer. I haven't been in on any sort of national briefings. I only listen. I get my information from the news. And I know that the goal is we have to have a balanced budget. And from within that balanced budget, we have to make sure that our country is safe. And that means we have to have a military that's able to keep us safe. That means they have to have the equipment, the training, and the manpower to do that.
Well, let me ask it this way. Are there other areas of the federal government which you would advocate big cuts in funding to be able to fund the military that you would like to see?
Well, I believe in a limited form of government, not just small government, but limited. I have, from the get-go, thought about it would be pretty nice to eliminate some of the larger bureaucracies. One of the ways to fix the Veterans Administration is to start carving that thing apart. I think there are a lot of services provided by the VA today that could be privatized, and I think that would help. I think we've allowed the VA to get too big so that no one is held accountable for bad things. No one, and it's entirely inefficient and mismanaged. I think we start carving that back, we'll be able to provide better services for our veterans, and we'll reduce the cost to the American taxpayer.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email is talk@mainepublic.org. If you do send an email, please keep your question or comment brief. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Our guest today, 1st District Congressional Candidate Mark Holbrook. Mark, what is your view of Social Security? Is it an entitlement that must be protected? And if so, how does the government do so?
I guess I kind of bristle at calling it an entitlement. I regard it as a promise that's been made to the American citizen, and I think we ought to uphold our promises. We've got to find a way to shore that up and make sure that the people who rely on it can do so, that they can rely on it.
How so?
How do we do that?
That the trust fund runs out, and I believe the estimate is 2034 right now.
Yeah, well, if that were an easy question to answer, somebody would have figured that one out yet. But I think probably looking at different things, like right now the threshold is $110,000 where the cutoff is. I know my opponent is an advocate for increasing that as one solution. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with increasing taxes. I don't believe that's going to help us. But if the economy is running, we have the lowest worker participation rate since the 1970s in this country. If more people were working, there'd be more money flowing into the system. I think that's a big part of the solution, getting people back to work.
All right. One of the other issues I've heard you talk about before is the Affordable Care Act, how frustrated you are and how opposed you are to the Affordable Care Act. What would you like to see? I know that you'd like to see Congress repeal the ACA. What would you like to see happen in its place?
Well, there's a number of different things. I'd like to see competition opened up. I think that would be a big asset to all Americans. One of my volunteers just got his renewal notice. His premiums are going up 77.1%. The Affordable Care Act, from my standpoint, is a big oxymoron. It's neither affordable nor does anybody care. It was created by a guy who I think ought to be tried for treason. When Jonathan Gruber said that the only way this was going to work was that he was relying on the stupidity of the American public, that guy ought to be tried for treason. It was designed to fail. The Affordable Care Act is designed to fail, with the only potential solution to be, as they call it, a public option or a single-payer system that is socialized medicine. And I'm not for that, and I don't want that to happen. I want to be able to help people be able to have what they need without creating this big bureaucracy. Here's one thing we can do. We can expand the health savings accounts. We can reduce the threshold for the individual taxpayer from 10% to 7.5% so that they can begin deducting their medical expenses. Pingree doesn't support that. And that is a direct tax on the middle class and our seniors. If we only drop that from 10 to 7.5, that will help.
All right. Well, I'll ask you one more question before we go to a break. And after the break, we'll take your calls and questions, those of you in the audience. We're going to be doing a main calling program later this week on expanding broadband internet connection to the rural areas of Maine. How important do you believe it is to have everyone have access to high-speed internet? And what do you think the role of the federal government should be in making sure that happens?
I've got to go back to the Affordable Care Act and because one important aspect of that just came to mind, is that we have to be able to have individuals deduct their premiums off their income taxes. That ought to be tax deductible.
All right.
To answer your question about broadband, would you say that again?
Well, I'm just wondering, it's a big issue here in Maine. So many people, especially compared to many of the smaller and less rural states, have access to high-speed internet, and wondering what you believe the role of the federal government should be in bringing high-speed internet to rural parts of Maine.
You know, I think it would be great if the federal government, that is myself and Congressman Poliquin, were working very hard to get new companies to come to Maine and develop jobs for the people that are here. If we have companies that are bringing their operations to Maine, along with that will come infrastructure development. Now, whether the company pays for it entirely or whether it's a combination of private, public, I'm not sure. But I think if we were working very hard toward bringing new jobs into the state of Maine, the infrastructure would follow.
All right. Well, we're talking with First District Congressional Candidate Mark Holbrook. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions for him. This is Maine Calling.
Your Vote 2016 programming is made possible by your support and by the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at MEMIC.com. And Lambert Coffin, legal advisors for Maine families in estate planning, probate administration, and will contests. Online at LambertCoffin.com.
On the next Fresh Air, comic Chris Gethard. His new off-Broadway show is a comic monologue about subjects he used to be hesitant to deal with on stage, depression and suicidal thoughts. Gethard also co-stars in Mike Birbiglia's movie Don't Think Twice, about an improv comedy group. Gethard did improv for years with the Upright Citizens Brigade. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. With elections for both of Maine's congressional seats and several important referendum questions regarding marijuana legalization, tax surcharge on higher incomes, background firearm checks, minimum wage, and voter ranking, Maine Public's Your Vote 2016 online election resource is something to keep in mind as you make your voting booth decisions. Both Maine Public Radio and television are offering Your Vote 2016 programming, and all of our programs, from our congressional debates to the Maine Calling referendum programs, will be added to the site to watch or listen to as they become available. Visit mainepublic.org and click on Your Vote 2016, or go directly to mainepublic.org/yourvote.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a conversation with 1st Congressional District candidate Mark Holbrook. He is a Republican seeking to unseat Shelley Pingree. This is part of our Your Vote 2016 coverage. You can find all of our Your Vote 2016 debates and interviews at mainepublic.org. If you'd like to join the conversation today, call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post the Maine Calling Facebook page. We will start in Naples with Dick. Hi, Dick. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you very much. I think the most important issue that we should be facing is climate change. I'd like to get your guest's opinion on tidal and wind energy in Maine and the Maine addressing climate change. Thank you.
Great question, Dick. Thank you. I am all for clean, renewable energy. Love it. Love all of it. I love, you know, the state of Maine. I love hiking and fishing. I used to hunt. I don't hunt anymore. And I am a big supporter of it as long as any of these programs are self-sustaining and don't require taxpayer support.
All right. Thanks, Dick, for your question. We'll go to Woolwich and Michael. Hi, Michael. You're on Maine Calling with Mark Holbrook.
Hi there. Good afternoon. I have a couple of comments and a question about immigration. You know, I find one of Mr. Holbrook's statements completely unsupportable. It's kind of like, I know it's a good Republican talking point, but the idea that refugees are flooding into the country unscreened, it's just not true. It takes a minimum of 2 years per person of vetting to get these people across the border. So it's not like, you know, the idea they're just pouring in is not true. I also would note that the current administration has deported more people than, as far as I know, all other administrations, you know, collectively. And finally, as a matter of fact, I'm an economist and a banker. Net immigration from the southern border to the United States for the last 5 or 6 years has approximately been zero and sometimes negative. That's just so I'd like your reaction to those thoughts, and I'll hang up and take it on the radio.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Mark?
Michael, I don't want to offend you, but I disagree with everything you've said. Every point you make, I find the premise to be faulty. Hillary Clinton is saying she wants to bring in another 250,000 refugees. And the idea that it takes 2 years or 20 years to vet a refugee is irrelevant because we still lack the documentation from someone living in a desert in the Middle East to be able to determine who they are, what their character is, and what their background is. Now, I have a friend and a colleague who married a psychologist from a European country, and she was 2 years getting the man to Maine, to the United States, and to become a citizen. I kept telling her to go down to Mexico and have him swim the river. He'd have been here a lot quicker and had all kinds of services to support him. When you take someone from a European country that has a doctoral degree working at a major university in Europe, and it takes 2 years to get someone like that in here, I don't know how you're ever able to adequately vet someone who lives in the desert in the Middle East.
Mark, you said that somebody who comes from Mexico would have all kinds of services to support him. What kind of services do you mean?
Refugees right now. I said Mexico as a way for people to get in illegally. And that was maybe too much of a generalization. But people, certainly immigrants, illegal aliens, they're able to get themselves to California. Are apparently making their ways to sanctuary cities where they are getting services provided to them.
I'll move on to Jason calling from South Portland. Hi, Jason. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling with Mark Holbrook.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was on the fence between Representative Pingree and Mr. Holbrook until today, and I have my major issue is with the statements about the VA. I'm a veteran, and I can tell you that I have an issue with privatization because if the care then becomes driven by profit margin, which means that veterans suffer. And I have a secondary issue that you're saying that you want to carve it up and make it smaller, but one of the major issues the VA currently has is with understaffing. I think more money needs to be put into that. And I don't think you're going to find the efficiency or the savings that you're talking about.
And Jason, do you use the VA for your health care?
At times, yes, I do.
Mark?
Yeah, Jason, what I would, to complete that whole thought, I would like to see all of the veterans have the option of having TRICARE, which is the same insurance program that active duty military people have, or be able to stay with whatever center they are currently getting their services from, and allow the veterans to make the choice as to whether or not they want to go on private insurance or stay with the VA. But the truth of the matter is that things like mental health services, it's not necessary that the federal government provide those. There are some specific services that the VA provides that I think are probably unique because of the population. Things like traumatic brain injury treatment and research is a big area that I think the VA ought to hang on to. Another one has to do with amputees and the research and treatment that's going on there. I think the VA is leading the way in that particular area. But, you know, and I've heard from a number of veterans who think, like Jason does, that the answer is to bring in more people so that there are more people to service the veterans. I don't see that as a viable option, and it certainly goes against the idea of reducing the size of it so that we can have people held accountable when something bad goes on.
Jason, thanks for your call. We're going to move up to Freeport and Richard. Hi, Richard. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, yes. Question for Dr. Holbrook. Vladimir Putin, for the last many years, has reached out to the West hoping to work with us. And what have we done? Both Republicans and Democrats equally have demonized him and accused him basically of being some combination of Stalin and Hitler. Donald Trump, on the other hand, says, let's work with this guy. He's reaching out to us. He may not be perfect, but we have enemies like ISIS to fight. Why are we demonizing him going in potentially to World War III? So my question to you, Dr. Holbrook, is would you be willing to move in that direction and more in realpolitik and say, here's an opportunity to work with Putin instead of pushing NATO down his throat and causing World War III? What's your position on all of this?
Yeah, Richard, thanks for that question. So Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify, and I like that. I am more than willing to give most anyone a shot at being honest, straightforward, and then behaving in ways consistent with that. But as soon as they don't, the repercussions and consequences have to be immediate and proportional, if not severe.
Richard, thanks for your call. We'll move to Rockport and Robin. Hi, Robin. Go ahead.
Hi, how you all doing? Great show. I always watch you, or I should say I listen to you in my car.
Thank you.
And I have a quick question to ask either of you. First of all, I'd like to make a comment about the CARE Act, okay, that is in place here for the medical situation. I see that as being a total disaster, and the outcome of that is going to be a disaster. So my question is, in terms of the VAs, I see them going away and the ex-military retirees that are getting health provided by VAs, being that they're going to go away and we're going to go to privatized health care for them. Can you tell me what the outcome of that would be?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Go ahead. Could you clarify, please, Robin?
Okay. When Obamacare started and everybody was guaranteed to have tremendous health care opportunities, et cetera, and we're seeing that right now Medicare is being depleted to give subsidies to the people to afford their current health care. When all this goes away, what are we really going to be left with? and particularly the VAs are going to be downsizing to the point where they're going to be having to go to that platform, the Affordable Care Act there, to obtain health care throughout their life cycle. So I guess my question is how do you perceive that happening, and is it in your opinion that this will take place?
Well, Robin, thanks. I got to carve that up a little bit. So I'm back to my position of saying the Affordable Care Act has got to go. The couple of pieces of it that I agree with, we want to keep. You know, the idea that the VA system should stay around and get bigger is to me more, you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. You know, the definition of insanity. If we privatize the VA as much as possible, I think that you will see the services will be better, they'll be more efficient, and people will be held accountable for the outcomes. I don't see that there's a downside to that. You know, if the Affordable Care Act was so great, I think that Congress would not have exempted themselves from it, and I think that Barack Obama would have card one. But that's not the case. They exempted themselves from it. They have exempted some unions from it. They've got the rest of, you know, the rulers in Washington are saying, no, that's, you know, we don't want to be part of that, but we want everybody else to be. I don't think that's right, and I think that's part of the very low acceptance level that Americans have. You know, it's, what is it? It's around 11% or something, that approval rating of Congress right now. And I think people see that, you know, there's a set of rules for the people that, who rule us, and then there's a set of rules and laws for the rest of us.
Robin, thanks for your call. I have an email here from Diego. He says, you cannot let this candidate get away with saying the U.S. military services have declined without giving far more indicative examples than what he's done. Our armed forces are by far and away the strongest and most capable on Earth and in historical sense ever.
Good point, Diego. I'm glad that you asked for some specifics. So all of my evidence comes from the evening news and the anecdotal information I get from my patients and from my relatives who are still in the military. And I don't know one of them who say that the conditions for being in the military have not declined, from whether it's morale or equipment or readiness. Now, we do have the best military in the world, and I think even in its current state, we could kick anybody else's ass, but we have got to be able to do better.
We'll go to Lewiston and Mohammed. Hi, Mohammed. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thanks, Jennifer. Hi. I just want to ask your guest today, if you support Donald Trump, and if you, what do you think about the treatment of women and immigrants with the way he's talking? If you want to say something, I just want to hear that.
Sure. Yes, I support Donald Trump. He's the party's nominee, and he's not part of the Clinton crime family, so I'm all over, you know, I'm all for Donald Trump. Regarding his treatment of women, you know, I understand that popular media is, you know, sort of eviscerating him over things he's said and things that have come up. I'm no fan of it. In fact, I've been watching a lot of the debates with my 12, 13-year-old daughter, and some of the things that have come up, had I been able to reach through the television and grab those people around the neck, I would have liked to have done that. But he is not part of the Clinton crime family. We know what we're going to get with Hillary Clinton, and it's corruption. Donald Trump, he gets in. I like everything he says about putting America first and making America great again. We put him in 4 years. If he doesn't perform, we primary his rear end out and put somebody else in.
Mohammed, thanks so much for your call. We do need to go to another break. We're speaking with 1st District Congressional Candidate Mark Holbrook, a Republican. If you'd like to call, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Your Vote 2016 programming is made possible by your support and by Lambert Coffin, advocating for individuals and businesses in Maine trial courts and administrative agencies, online at lambertcoffin.com. The Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. And MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at MEMIC.com. Tonight at 9 on Maine Public Television, we'll broadcast the Your Vote 2016 Maine Calling radio program addressing Maine referendum ballot question number 2, which proposes a 3% tax on household incomes over $200,000. Maine Calling has examined most of the November ballot questions, and they will be shown on television at different times and available as an election resource anytime at mainepublic.org. Click on Your Vote 2016. Again, Maine Calling this evening at 9 on Maine Public Television on Maine referendum ballot question number 2.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today, a Your Vote 2016 program, the race for Maine's first congressional district seat. And our guest is GOP candidate Mark Holbrook. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Palmyra and Chuck. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Hello. I have a question, another VA-related question for Mr. Holbrook. I'm a veteran. I've received about 95% of my medical services from the VA over the last 20 years. I hear a lot of people who vaguely talk about what's wrong with VA. I think it's an excellent organization. I think the state of Maine is extremely fortunate to have the VA. And my question is, specifically, what does Mr. Holbrook think is wrong with the VA? Because I, as a veteran, don't see it.
Yeah, Chuck, listen, thank you for your service. I greatly appreciate that. I have friends and colleagues who work at TOGUS, and individually they provide very good care and very good services to our veterans, and I appreciate all the work that they do. My concern is, in large part, let's talk about the 307,000 veterans who are allowed to die on a wait list, and really there hasn't been any accountability for that, and apparently these shadow wait lists continue. They haven't learned anything yet. And those sorts of things bother me. $11 million that was spent on artwork for new facilities bothers me. I'd like to have seen all that money go to providing services to our veterans. I think it's just my experience of the federal government is that they don't do anything very well except the military. Everything else that they try to provide comes up short in my book, whether it's the, you know, name the department. And I would like to think that since it's not working real well now, let's try something different. Let's privatize it. And guess what? 10 years from now, if we decide that that wasn't the right way to go, we can fix it. But I know what we've been doing isn't working real well.
Chuck, thanks for your call. We have a post from Josh on Facebook. He says, where does Holbrook stand on question 3? And that's a question that asks about background checks for private sales of firearms.
Thank you for that. So I believe that the Constitution is the law of the land and we ought to abide by it. And that includes all of the amendments. And I believe that question 3 is an attempt to chip away at our constitutional rights. And I am dead set against question 3. Actually, I'm against all 5 of the referenda that are coming up here in Maine.
All right. We have a question from Jennifer on Facebook. Has Dr. Holbrook spent time talking with new Mainers and refugees here in Maine? If so, what has he learned from them?
Actually, I did my postdoctoral internship at a community mental health center where a lot of our patients were new immigrants, refugees. So, yes, the answer to that question is yes. And what I witnessed was that a lot of people were struggling trying to assimilate to this country, in large part because we are so different from their homeland. They are here in a culture and in where the language is different, the culture is different, the there isn't anything about this really that they would talk about that was similar to what they left behind. I really wish that we had been able and had the forethought to help people where they live, to keep them over there, wherever over there is, and to help keep them safe and to help them grow and to help them thrive. And I'd like to see that as a big change in our policy going forward, is that rather than try to bring people from other cultures and other countries over here, that we try to help them wherever their home is. I think that's a more humane approach to refugees.
We have an email from Jonathan. He writes, I heard Mr. Holbrook assert that our pilots are currently having to make their own repairs. Can this assertion be backed up with evidence?
Like I said, I don't get national security briefings like the president does. I watch the news. I've seen, I think, two episodes where Marine Corps pilots were preparing to deploy, and they were talking about not having enough mechanics, and that they were having to cannibalize other aircraft in their squadron so that they could keep their planes flying.
We're going to go up to Casco and Joe. Hi, Joe. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. I just got one remark to make that he's accused. Well, from what I heard, he's accusing this administration about cutting the military back too far. He seems to forget we had Loring Air Force Base, we had Pease Air Force Base, we had larger bases all over the country here, and they've been being cut back for a long time. So to blame this past administration for it, the administration right now, is wrong, I believe. So it's just a remark I wanted to make. That's all I want to say.
Joe, that's a real good point. They started the base realignment effort back in the Bush administration, which is where they were trying to pare down bases that either were duplicates or unnecessary, which is why we lost Naval Air Station Brunswick, because all the P-3s went down to Jacksonville. That's an entirely different question to be talking about in terms of equipment and readiness today.
Okay, Joe, thanks for your call. We have a tweet. What is Mr. Holbrook's view on the losing drug war and his view on term limits?
Geez, I'm certain that's connected somehow, the drug war and term limits. The losing drug war. I've been to a couple of community forums where people have shared their stories about their experience with, or their family's experience with, people who are suffering from substance abuse. And my opinion is we have to close the borders down so that the drugs aren't freely coming in here. That's the first part of it. The second part is we have to do better at treatment. You know, I've been a grant reviewer for SAMHSA now for about 7 years, and I have yet to see a new RFP come across my desk for new behavioral health treatment for substance abuse issues. And then the third thing we have to start addressing is the prevention of drug abuse. I don't hear anyone talking about that. That is, you know, if we aren't discussing how to prevent people from getting addicted, we're just going to be talking about a revolving door. Term limits. You know, I really want to believe, and this may be a bit of an ideology that where I feel idealistic, that if we get a representative that we don't like, we vote them out. And I like that. But I also recognize the reality that there are some people like Pingree who are career politicians, and nothing more than political inertia keeps them in office and they're hard to get rid of. So, you know, I'm sort of on the fence about that question, Joe.
All right. Let's see here. We will go to Carl calling from Portland. Hi, Carl. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm not lobstering right now. I'm really impressed by your resume, Mr. Holbrook. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and the only reason why I don't know much about you other than what I've heard from the show, but I was thinking about switching to you because of how Shelley Pingree, as a superdelegate, voted against Bernie Sanders.
that aside, I heard you talking about veterans, and I'm not a veteran, but saying that you would keep care for amputees and neurological disorders intact, but try and hand off the behavioral health or mental illness aspect to possibly a private company or a co-sponsored by public and private, I think that that's a little preposterous. I think that if you look at the rising prices of healthcare, especially psychiatry or LCSWs, many a time a 20-minute meeting costs $300. And if you're going to take away support from the VA, that's like cutting someone off from what they need the most, putting them on the streets and saying, good luck, go fend for themselves, you know?
Carl, I so appreciate you calling, and I really love that you're calling from your lobster boat, but you are not advocating cutting people off from their VA care, are you?
No, I'm not. But I think what Carl is getting at is only a piece of the whole puzzle. You know, as a provider myself, I am contractually obligated to accept the reimbursement rates of TRICARE. And for TRICARE, for active duty military, Carl, they have no copayment. They have absolutely no copayment with me whatsoever. I accept whatever the rates are that the insurance company brings in. So there would not be any additional cost to the veteran at all. Just wouldn't happen. And boy, would I like to think I was getting $300 for a 20-minute session. That isn't the case, but...
Carl, thanks so much for your call, and we're going to move to Farmington. And Mark, hi, Mark, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just had to address a comment your guest made, which I found absolutely offensive, and I was kind of aghast, almost drove off the road when he suggested that his friend's partner, rather than come through legal channels, might find it easier to go to Mexico and swim across the river and get all sorts of wonderful benefits and you know, be able to access the wonders of this country a lot more with much more alacrity than the 2-year vetting process. I just found that extremely offensive, and his characterization of illegal immigrants does not really square up with reality. I mean, these folks are not living in a life of luxury. And if you remember, I don't know how long ago it was now, but you know, when several Central American guest workers up in the North Woods, Paris going off a bridge in a van. I just wanted to get his response. I mean, what on earth was he thinking to, someone running for public office and make such a statement like that? I just found very offensive. And I'll take his response off air. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Holbrook.
It was a joke. It was a joke to make a point.
All right. Thanks for your call, Mark. We have Portland and Teddy. Hi, Teddy. Go ahead.
Hi. Mr. Holbrook, on your campaign site, you say, "We now witness the extraordinary and mounting level of black-on-black murders without a peep from the president, Black Lives Matter, or Congresswoman Tingry. And statistics show that 84% of homicides are committed homicides committed by white people are against other white people. So I was wondering what you thought about white-on-white crime.
Well, the black-on-black crime, that data is pretty evident. And that comment on my website is mostly a reference to Chicago, which is where President Obama is from. And he comes out and has a three-ring circus around a police officer involved homicide of a black person, and yet he completely ignores what's going on in Chicago. And that's the point that I was trying to make on the website. And as for white-on-white crime, I mean, I'm against violence altogether. It really doesn't have a lot to do with the race of anybody in my book. I mean, most of my training and education, I've focused on violence and aggression. And I know that the argument about something called gun violence is, you know, that's a red herring. That isn't the problem. The problem is violence is the problem. That's what this country has been afraid of looking at for decades now.
Teddy, thanks for your question. We are running tight on time, and I want to give each of the candidates a chance to just sort of leave us with a little campaign spiel. So if you have about a minute, Mark, why should our listeners here today vote for you instead of Shelley Pingree in the 1st District?
Because she is the epitome of the ruling class. She isolates herself on an exclusive island off the coast of Maine. She comes into Rockland on a private boat, boards a private plane, and flies to Portland, and then gets on another jet to go wherever she's going to go. Her whole district is flyover country. On August 1st, I sent her a registered letter inviting her to do a joint town hall meeting with me so that we could meet the citizens that we'd be representing. She didn't acknowledge it. And that invitation is open, and I would love to do it. But Shelley Pingree has yet to address an unvetted audience, unless it's the Preble Street homeless shelter. She is the epitome of what's wrong with Washington, D.C. today. She feels that she is above us, above the rest of us down here, and literally she is, because she flies over the whole district.
All right.
And I will be a representative to everybody in the Southern District, and I'll be accessible. And I made a promise from the get-go that I would hold town hall meetings every month throughout the district while I served so that I could meet the people who employ me.
All right. Well, Mark Holbrook was our guest today. Mark Holbrook, the Republican candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Congresswoman Shelley Pingree joins us to make her case for another term representing Maine's 1st Congressional District. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to a Your Vote 2016 edition of Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.